So now we have disclosure initiative.
Yes, we do. So I was going to start by saying we've saved the best till last, but I'm not convinced that I can match up to accounting for football players. We will do our best, though. So this is the board's targeted standards level review of disclosures project. The purpose of this session is that we have been asked to provide an update on what is currently going on in the project, so that is what we will spend the next half hour or so on. However, I'm also planning to use this meeting to highlight to you the opportunity that is going to present itself later this year, not only to give us comments on the two standards whose amendments will be the subject of this targeted standards level review, but there is also a much bigger picture piece here, which is about an opportunity to influence a potential opportunity for the board to make real significant improvements to the way that it develops disclosure requirements going forward. We've also got a few slides at the end that summarise the feedback that we've received from GPF over the course of technical deliberations in the last year or so and how that feedback has been used. So given that this is an update session, I am planning to more or less talk through each of the slides that we have in the pack. That said, please feel absolutely free to interrupt if there's anything you'd like more detail on or have questions on as we go through the slides. So I'll start with a small amount of background for context. I'm sure that everyone in the room and on the video link is aware that the board has been discussing the arena of disclosure for a number of years. I will not name the number, but it is sizeable. And over those years, the board has done a number of things to be helpful in this space. So it's done things like amending the materiality definition, developing guidance to help companies apply more effective materiality judgments, making amendments to the overarching requirements of IAS 1, and some amendments regarding particular known issues with the disclosure requirements of certain standards. However, across all of the board's disclosure work, there is a much bigger picture, which is what can the board and indeed all stakeholders do to help with the disclosure problem that you see described on slide 4. And the reason that the targeted standards level review of disclosures exists is for the board to take steps to help with that problem. Really, what the board is looking to do is to improve the way it develops and drafts disclosure requirements to help companies deliver more effective disclosures in financial statements, and in particular, take steps to help move away from the infamous checklist approach, which is often reported to us as a problem and a challenge today. Slide five provides a reminder of how the board has gone about doing that within this project. You've seen this slide before, so very briefly, over the last couple of years, the board has developed a set of what we refer to as guidance for the board itself, which provides effectively a plan of how the board can do things better going forward to lead to disclosure requirements that will give rise to more effective disclosures in financial statements. So that guidance covers things like working closely with users of financial statements to develop meaningful disclosure objectives, things like thinking about how those disclosure objectives can be achieved and interrogating the costs associated with information that might be provided with preparers and other stakeholders. Things like how the board might most effectively use language in the standards to help companies move away from the checklist approach and indeed auditors and regulators. Things like making sure that the board is thinking about electronic reporting consequences when it is developing disclosure requirements and working with our sort of internal taxonomy experts to make sure that we do the best we can there. So having developed that guidance, the board then identified a couple of standards to test it on. I'm sure you all remember those discussions, and picked IAS 19 and IFRS 13 on the grounds that those two standards embody a lot of the elements that we have consistently been told contribute to the disclosure problem. So things like a lack of meaningful objectives, things like particular requirements that are overly lengthy or prescriptive or hard to understand, And ultimately, we're told those two standards lead to notes in the financial statements that do contain some information that is not material to users, and they sometimes miss information that is most relevant to users and aren't always communicated most effectively. Now, we have, over the course of thinking about the disclosure requirements of those two standards, had a lot of detailed discussions both around the board table with each of our consultative groups, including yourselves and including, I'm sure you'll recall, our joint meeting with yourselves and CMAC last summer. Coming out of all of that work, the board has now more or less finalised a set of proposals. And just before we came to this meeting, we pressed the button on our board paper that asks the board to give us permission to ballot an exposure draft on this project. So assuming that the board do indeed grant us that permission at their meeting the week after next, we are really in the final red circle on this slide, which is preparing an exposure draft for publication later this year. Now, in terms of what that exposure draft will do, we're almost coming back here, having had months and months of detailed discussion about our two standards, to the big picture around the disclosure problem. So turning to slide 8, the exposure draft will really do two main things. The first is that it will propose amendments to the disclosure sections of IAS 19 and IFRS 13, and those amendments will reflect all of the elements that the board decided upon when developing its guidance for the board. So to pick out some critical areas of that, with both standards, the board has developed and the exposure draft will contain a set of specific disclosure objectives that companies are required to comply with. So those disclosure objectives will be framed as an entity shall disclose information that enables users to whatever it is that they need to do. And those will be quite specific and detailed and go on to explain what users will do with the information. Now, the purpose of developing those objectives is so that the board has communicated to companies, auditors, and indeed all of our stakeholders for every item of information that is mentioned in the standards, exactly why that is useful. And the reason that the board decided to do that was that if companies understand why information is useful, it is going to be much more realistic and feasible to make meaningful materiality judgments. Now, underlying those objectives in all of our proposals are then sets of information that represent different ways that companies might comply with the objective. Now, in the great majority of cases, those items of information within the proposals do not start with the words a company shall. Instead, they are framed as things that, whilst not mandatory, may enable companies to meet the objective. Now, what that means in practical terms is that the compliance requirement in these proposals, if they were to be finalised, would move away from has a company disclosed X piece of information and two, has a company achieved the objective. That is where the compliance burden is, if you like, and the items of information are there to help companies make that judgment. So that's more or less what the amendments to the two standards will look like in our upcoming exposure draft. The other important element is that it will contain the guidance for the board itself, so it will explain in detail all of the tentative decisions that the board has made about how it will improve what it does going forward, and indeed the things that have led to the particular proposals in our two test standards. And the critical message that we are sharing with stakeholders in the run-up to this exposure draft is that this is a lot more than just a set of amendments to the disclosure requirements of these two standards. There is a much bigger picture here. So what we will be asking for is input in the detailed proposals themselves, i.e. the effects that they will have on disclosures applying IAS 19 and IFRS 13, but we will also be looking for feedback about the bigger picture. Using those two examples, will this achieve the benefits that we have been told throughout the years of receiving feedback on the disclosure problem that it might? So to sort of explain that a little bit more, I'm going to turn to slide 9, which contains some of the questions that the board will be asking when we get to publishing our exposure draft. We'll be asking things like, well, to all of those companies that have told us today they have these really long 10 or more page pension notes, for example, that are a direct consequence of applying the lengthy prescriptive requirements that are today in IAS 19, will what the board has proposed enable them to apply more effective judgment? Will it enable you to take the things that you believe do not provide useful information to investors and make the judgment call to replace that with things that are more useful, or indeed eliminate it to the extent that it is not useful at all? Similarly, companies that have told us they've got pages and pages of level 3 fair value information that for them is immaterial in its entirety, will the approach that the board is thinking about now enable you to deal with that and not disclose that information that in your view is not providing useful information to investors? The flip side is also true. We've heard from companies that there are times when they are spending so much time going through the prescriptive requirements today, applying the checklist, that even when they think, okay, there's something else that would be far better information, but applying the checklist means I never get to deliver that, will these proposals give you what you need to be able to practically apply that effective judgment? We'll also be interrogating things like audit consequences, indeed with auditors themselves, but we'll also be interested in companies' views on what those effects might be. For example, does the approach the board is looking at taking enable you to have more meaningful conversations with auditors rather than talking about have you complied with everything on a long list of required pieces of information? At the other extreme, would it make it very difficult to get those audit discussions over the line because it would enforce such a level of judgment? We'll also be thinking about effects for users, and we'll be really interested on your views on whether this approach will genuinely enable companies to focus on that information which they feel is the most relevant and the most material. So as I said, this really is about much more than amendments to the two standards in question. It's a much bigger interrogation that the board is looking to do with that. And what we are really trying to do with this exposure draft is take years of feedback that has said what the standards do contribute to the disclosure problem and put on paper if the board is to address all of the problems that have been put in front of us, this is what it will look like. Now, what the board now need to know if these benefits are to be achieved is, will it really achieve what we're expecting? We'd like companies to interrogate the two examples, interrogate the approach, and really think through the practical consequences of what has been done here. So really, the overarching message is that when this exposure draft comes, there is a door of opportunity to a potentially very, very beneficial change beyond just the two standards in question, but those benefits will only be achieved if we get the input that we need. So before moving on to the particular feedback we've had, I'm going to pause to see if there are any questions or observations at this point.
Ian has it. Ian?
A very quick one. I mean, just taking IAS 19, is it your expectation that the total length of the disclosures will be shorter as a result of this?
I am going to give you a slightly lengthier answer to that than a simple yes or no, I'm afraid. With this project, from the beginning, the board has been very, very clear that their objective is not to reduce the length of disclosures, nor is it to increase the length of disclosures. And given that that is the case, I could not and should not give you a straight yes, this will lead to a straight deletion of disclosures in IAS 19. However, I am prepared to give you a personal view, and at this stage, you know, please do take it as a personal view. What our proposals do is give companies tools that effectively require them to apply judgment rather than disclosing a distinct list of things. Now, if those proposals are applied in the way that the board is intending in drafting them, then any disclosure that is given today that genuinely does not provide useful information to investors, my personal belief is that these proposals will give companies what they need to get rid of them. Now, they will also require everything that is relevant and material to be in, so that in some areas they may lead to information that is not there today. With pensions, a key example of that would be cash, which we've talked about before. Cash effects is something that we have an objective about that might lead to additional information. So the balance for any individual company between disclosures that applying effective judgment will allow you to eliminate and disclosures that applying effective judgment will mean have to be there will be a little bit different. The more complicated the pension arrangements, the more detail is going to be required to give investors what they need. However, if I were to take many examples of pension notes that we've seen and discussed with investors over the course of this project and say, do I believe that effective disclosure could be given in less space? My personal view is yes, it could, but it's not as simple as saying, just take a red pen to it. It's going to require some work. So I'm sorry for the waffle, but does that help?
Yeah, that's fine. Yes.
Very briefly, what is the
if this goes through and the feedback is yes, it helps? Mm-hmm. Have you already thought about what the next steps are? The one example in parallel to this, the presentation project is running. Mm-hmm. IAS 1 and a lot of the pieces that are carried over from IAS 1 start with you shall disclose. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that would be odd if the same things came out at the same time in a way of, hey, this is our future approach, and this is the first standard we do after we decided for the new approach, and that's still the old approach. But now we can't change it before we've done the post-implementation reviews or live with it for the next few years. That would be odd. I understand that it's difficult to align the timing, but because IAS 1 and the successor are so prominent, I would see some benefit in some alignment that the decision whether this is a future approach is taken before the successor of IAS 1 is issued, and that this new thinking can be still considered, because it is a very prominent standard. It would be a prominent one to show the new approach. Mm-hmm. And it would be odd if it came out together with the decision that this is no longer what we want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I will, of course, see if the board members in the room have got anything to add, but just to comment briefly in terms of next steps, the board has sort of raised at more or less every board meeting that we've had on this subject the matter that you describe, i.e. what does this mean in terms of other projects and bigger picture and next steps. And I think at the moment, you know, a lot of the board are very conscious that what we are doing is a really new thing, that it would be perhaps irresponsible to try and do too broadly until we have fully interrogated what the practical consequences are likely to be. So one of the reasons that we are sort of pushing so hard the need for feedback on this is that the board members have sort of made clear that they will not feel comfortable, and I'm looking to the board members in the room to correct me if they feel I'm misrepresenting the group position, but they will not feel comfortable spreading this more widely unless and until they have really good evidence about what the effects are likely to be and what the practical outcomes are likely to be. So I think the point you raise is an excellent one, but we have a real obligation to do our due diligence on what this will mean for all stakeholder types. So at the moment, it is a test that is applicable to these two standards only.
And that is a test, as you said, and it is not that if we're now getting from stakeholders of the exposure draft positive feedbacks that we're now changing the whole IFRS world on that, because when some people also think, okay, we have a test is even that we want to see it applied. And also in the last board meeting, Sue said already, why can't we test it in addition to that? Because we have an element of this objective-based disclosure requirements in 15, we have also some in 9, where people say they're objective, and we can now also test in a live case because people have applied that already for 1 or 2 years, and we can see has it worked, and we should take that in addition to what we get feedback from the exposure to raft, and maybe we should do some field testing and see, okay, it's not so that the board has already said, okay, if we get positive feedbacks that we now done and change the whole IFRS world on this objective based.
Yes, I can add to that, Martin. It was very much a feeling at the board table that we'd need to see evidence of how this is going to work. We'll keep in mind what you're raising about the timing differences, because we'll be pushing ahead with the changes to IAS 1 through primary financial statements, and that'll happen independently. So, yeah.
I would just... Well, it has influenced our thinking, though, in that we do have that broader disclosure objective that I think has been guiding us in our thinking, but we haven't gone all the way without the evidence. But I think when we do look at IAS 1, we are starting with this idea of stating more clearly an overall disclosure objective for various things. And I think that's affecting the disclosures we're going to favor as we go through it.
You can see it coming through in some of the work where I've seen the papers that are coming for the discussion paper for rate regulation, and there's reference to disclosure objectives. As Martin says, there's some elements of that already in 9 and 15 and indeed in a couple of other places. But you can see the staff making use of disclosure objectives and that sort of idea, but they haven't gone as far as this project goes with these two standards in taking that different approach to the shall or the while not mandatory.
So the entity shall disclose appears 25 times in this exposure draft on successor of IS 1.
Mm. Yeah, yes, but it's still with shall.
Mm. Srinath?
You're on mute.
Sorry. I would like to know the timing of this exposure draft, and when do you think you will do the field test with volunteering companies?
I am very pleased you asked this question, because I'm sensing a volunteer. So in the slides, I think we say Q3. We on the staff team are... likely looking at September, we think.
Thank you.
And if you are volunteering for field testing, please do do let us know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Anybody else?
Okay. The final section of the slide.
Sorry. That's one comment. I think the idea of approaching objectives is very interesting, disclosure objectives. But I'm looking here at slides 13 and 15. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, when I think about the disclosure objective for a user, I would normally expect something that would help him project cash flows, estimate how the entity will perform in the future. But when I see these objectives that have been identified here, which are to enable the user to understand the assumptions, and I'm not saying that I disagree with the idea of having sensitive analysis being disclosed, but the objective of having that information being disclosed to make sure that the user can rely on the information that is being produced and being disclosed in the financial statement, that's something that I think is a little bit strange. And the same thing happens in slide 15 with value measurement, where apparently the sensitive analysis would be disclosed to comply with an objective, which is to make sure that the user understands the reasonably possible fair values that might exist at the reporting date. And that this gives me the feeling that this is going to be disclosed just to make sure that the user can rely on that information, even though companies have to go through a lot of auditing procedures and everything else that is revised and audited and discussed and analyzed during these procedures. and still that information needs to be disclosed to make sure that the user can rely on it. So, I'm not saying that this information should not be disclosed, but I'm questioning the objective, whether...
Yeah, I think that's a fair challenge. You've said a few things there that I'm going to try and respond to. Let me know if I fail to provide helpful information. In terms of developing the slides themselves, given that this is an update session, what we were trying to do was summarise what we'd heard from GPF previously, which is the left-hand column, and a high-level how did that get into what the board has decided on the right. These slides are not a representation of what the board's proposals are. Given that this was an update, we didn't want to give you sort of pages and pages of detail. The actual sort of objectives that have come out of all the board's work are an order of magnitude more detailed than what you are getting on these slides. So what they all do is provide an objective and then go on to provide one or, in most cases, more than one explanation of what a user is going to do with the information, literally what analysis are they looking to perform, what assessment are they going to make, what is it they're trying to understand. So to take sensitivity as an example, we heard feedback from yourselves that in light of some of the things that users have said were useful, there were concerns from GPF and indeed some other preparers about the sort of the costs and effects of having to disclose detail like multiple assumptions, how they interact with each other, how they move in isolation, and a question of whether, well, would that level of detail actually hit the need that users are identifying. Having listened to that feedback, what our proposals are ultimately doing is explaining that what users want is essentially to understand the degree of measurement and certainty. And then we go into a list of different ways a company might achieve that in terms of items of information. And with our with that particular objective, what we're trying to do is explain the underlying goal precisely so that companies are able to understand that if they were going to disclose information about an individual assumption that had no bearing on the overall uncertainty, i.e. the most or the least that the overall liability might be, then that doesn't actually help a user achieve their base objective, and it would help them to eliminate that information. So the point I'm trying to make is that I wouldn't want you to take these slides as a complete representation of our proposals. They are quite a bit more detailed than this. This is about these are the topics you gave us feedback on and how that feedback has factored in. The other point that I wanted to respond to was about your concern that some of the information might be there only... I can't remember exactly how you phrased it, but to deal with the fact that users might question, are the numbers right? I think that was cut along the lines of what you said. Personally speaking, I feel confident that there is nothing in the board's proposals that we are not able to point to and say, this is why users want the information, and those reasons are not because they don't like trust the numbers, if I may refer to it as that. It's because there's something particular that they want to understand. So if it's reassuring at all, part of the board's process is to not put pieces of disclosure information in standards for which the only reason they're there is to double check the numbers. They are all based on a legitimate underlying information need, and our drafting goal as we get our heads down and turn this into a set of amendments for the standards is to make sure that we make that clear in the drafting.
So thank you.
Good.
Okay, the last section of the slides then runs through the feedback we've heard from you previously. We've already mentioned a number of items. I will just highlight a few of the more significant ones, but we're very happy to take questions on any of this. So with regard to employee benefits, probably the most detailed discussion that we had with yourselves last summer was about the cash flow effects of pension schemes. That's something that very much came through user feedback as critical to them. And indeed, we did get the message that good information about cash flow effects could perhaps be more useful than some of what is disclosed today. We had that detailed discussion with yourselves, and I think the message that we got was an understanding of the user's position and why that information was so useful, and that there is information that could quite feasibly be disclosed. So ultimately, the board has developed an objective in this area relating to cash flow effects. That's one where we had a lot of discussion over a number of board meetings about the kinds of information that might meet that need. The reason those discussions were so involved is because this is an area where we have to be particularly cognizant of different jurisdictional information that might be available, what's realistic to different schemes, and all of those things are sort of reflected in the board's proposals. The other item on the same slide, slide 12, is what I would refer to as a user need for an executive summary of pension disclosure. So something at the start of the note that essentially gives big picture, okay, these are the pension numbers in the financial statements, and enables a user to navigate any detailed information that follows. I highlight that because that was something that came through all of the outreach meetings we had as particularly critical and beneficial to information effectiveness. The other item in IS 19 that I wanted to highlight, because it got such a level of debate when we've spoken to you previously, is the fact that users raise with us that they would be interested in explanations of differences between different pension valuations that exist. Having heard all of the feedback and discussions on that topic, the board ultimately decided not to develop a disclosure objective in that area. That was for a number of reasons, but ultimately the board did feel that would be an unrealistic expectation on companies. And there were also other considerations, such as the fact that that would almost verge more on the education in terms of the differences between different valuations, rather than being information sort of specific to the company. A couple of items to highlight on IFRS 13 then, and I'm going to turn right to the last slide, which is slide 16. Probably the biggest point of debate throughout our discussions on IFRS 13 has been about disclosures about level 3 fair value measurements relative to level 2 fair value measurements, because probably the most consistent piece of feedback we've had from all stakeholder types is about the length and level of detail of disclosures that are typically provided about level 3 financial instruments when either for example, non-financial institutions, sometimes those amounts are immaterial in their entirety, or, for example, for some financial institutions, level 2 is much, much more significant, and users might prefer to see some more relevant information there. So the board, again, has had a number of really thorough debates about this matter, and it's decided to deal with this in two ways. One is that it has included in its sort of high-level objectives at the top of all of our IFRS 13 exposure proposals some guidance about the level of detail that companies should be thinking about when applying these disclosures. I'm trying to highlight the fact that, you know, information that is useful should not be obscured by pages and pages of things that are immaterial, precisely there to again highlight the fact that if information is immaterial or boilerplate, it doesn't need to be there. The other big decision the board has made is that throughout most of its specific disclosure objectives and items of information that it is proposing for IFRS 13, it is not making explicit reference to the different levels. It is putting judgment in the hands of companies about which are the fair value measurements that are most relevant for disclosure. So very happy to talk a bit more about the proposals there if anyone's got particular questions, but that's just to highlight sort of the big discussion point on this one.
Thanks, Catherine. Any comments on that part?
Maybe one general one. In all the discussions on
disclosure objectives and disclosure approaches, I remember at some point there was discussion around disclosing something in the financial statement versus somewhere else. And the somewhere else could, for example, be the management report that we will get more detailed guidance on. And honestly, if you prepare both of them, and we have very detailed management reports in Germany already, the level of redundancy is painful. And oftentimes there are certain things that you would think, well, that's something I would rather put into the management report when I'm required, like risk management approaches and all that. Or if you see disclosures on board compensation, you do a huge compensation report as part of your management report, and then additionally, to fulfill IAS 24, you report some of the numbers again.
Mm-hmm. Has that made any progress on only disclose if you haven't disclosed it elsewhere kind of approach?
So the discussions that you're referring to were sort of in two directions. What I think the one you're most referring to is cross-referencing outside the financial statements, and is that a generally acceptable thing to do? So the board had a big interrogation of that possibility probably a couple of years ago now. And what we found in that interrogation, if I may call it that, is that if the board were to introduce a general piece of permission for companies to just cross-refer to other documents, that would introduce a number of complications. So to name a few, the scope of an auditor's work in terms of ring fencing, how far outside the financial statements they are sort of committing to having reviewed, if you like. Another example is the availability of information, in the sense that there is a risk that if a company referred in its financial statements this year to information on a website or in a different document, if in 5 years' time a user picked up that document, what rules, if I may call them that, could be in place to ensure that the information that is only in the financial statements by virtue of cross-reference remains available. Like, that's quite a difficult thing to do. So we did a lot of research on these issues and talked to sort of a number of like auditors, regulators, etc. The board didn't conclude that the issues that existed were completely insurmountable, but they did introduce such a level of practical challenge that at that time the board decided that, you know, the challenge almost wasn't worth the potential benefits. So as part of our guidance for the board and what we're doing now, one of our considerations is to help companies avoid duplication within the financial statements. So we would always try and allow internal cross-referencing and not duplicating stuff within the standards, etc. But in terms of the financial statements relying on things that are elsewhere completely, that's not, beyond the I think there's two examples in the entire book today where it's explicitly allowed. One is in IAS 19, I think the other is in IFRS 7. The board hasn't gone beyond that and isn't looking to right at the moment.
And that's the same for referring to prior period
financial statements. I know that the big four aren't aligned on the question, if I do a major acquisition in one period and do all the IFRS 3 disclosures on it, now the next year comes, do I have to repeat these as prior period information, or can I refer to my prior year set of financial statements? That's where the big four are not fully aligned on whether it is allowed to cross-reference to prior period in such scenarios. So I think that's something that will help as well to clarify whether I need to repeat everything that I disclosed in the previous year, or whether that comparable information has some limitations and you don't have to provide a detail of something that was last year but not this year.
Okay. We will take that as a good question and feedback, but I wouldn't want to answer that one off the cuff, so to speak, if that's okay.
Okay. Any other comment, question?
Not the case. Then thanks a lot. Okay, that will then end our official public GPF meeting. But before we're doing that, I want to say farewell to Christoph, because it is Christoph's last meeting. He is retiring from the GPF, but I heard also retiring from your company. I want to thank you very much for all your contributions, for your help.
Maybe you know Christoph was not only member of the GPF, he was also at the Revenue THG member, he was at the Advisory Council. Christoph and I had long times also at the German Standard Setting Board, where we at the same time were a member. So Christoph was always really very, very interested and preparer in the accounting, also in IFRS, in standard setting. And as I said, very well, thank you for all the time you have spent for us, for all the contributions. Christoph told me that he is not sure if he will continue anything in accounting, and I said to him in the over lunch, I know him, and I think he will not stop. He will. I'm sure we will see him in some kind of position, membership, back, but let's see. And give hands to... Thank you very much. Okay. Did you also to say one word?
No, I keep
Okay. Then we will close our public...